Hi, my name is Govind Jayaraman, and welcome to Paper Napkin Wisdom. Absolutely thrilled that you're joining me here today, and honored that you'd spend this half an hour with me through the podcast. The half an hour is really to focus on greatness, focus on great possibilities, these great pearls of wisdom that are often concise enough to fit on a paper napkin, but powerful enough to change the way we approach challenges, the way we approach opportunities, the way we approach just about anything in our lives that are in front of us right now. And that's what paper napkin wisdom is all about. Amazing is really the impact that it can have, and it's had an amazing impact on me, and I hope that it's having the same on you. Amazing is a great way also to describe our guest today. Our guest is Shep Hyken, and he's the Chief Amazement Officer of Shepherd Presentations, his own company. He's a best-selling author, and we're talking New York Times, Wall Street Journal best-selling author. He's also been inducted into the National Speakers Association Hall of Fame for lifetime achievement in speaking. He works with Fortune 500 companies, he works with small business, and he's written a number of books, all focused on customer service, but that's not what he's going to be talking about here today. He's going to be talking about his paper napkin wisdom. Let's listen in.
So I am sitting here with a guy who can only be described as amazing. The first time I met him, he was doing magic tricks at a global leadership conference for our entrepreneurs organization, and we've developed a friendship around hockey and a number of other things. Welcome to Paper Napkin Wisdom, Shep Hyken.
Hey, thanks for having me, Govind. This is going to be fun.
No, this is going to be a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun sitting with you. And you shared with me a really interesting paper napkin wisdom, and we already started talking about it. And I said, whoa, we got to get this, because this is great. This is a great conversation. So you said, when it comes to success, the difference between those that do and those that don't are that those that do, and those that don't, won't. It almost sounds like Dr. Seuss, but it's not, right?
Right. And the first time I heard that, someone told it to me, the last word was different. They said, those that do, and those that don't. And that's just because they don't do it. But I believe it's more than that. I believe they won't do it. And it's not because they make a choice not to do it. It's just it's they don't execute. They don't see the bigger picture. They don't look for the, you know, positive strategic byproducts that happen as a result of doing new things and different things and trying all kinds of different angles. So that's my little spin on that.
I think that's a really powerful spin, because there is a huge difference between won't and don't. Won't is that we're stopping ourselves. Don't are that you try and you may fail. And there's a chasm between those two comments.
Right. And I mean, and not only don't, is sometimes people just don't do it. And it's not that they consciously choose to not do something, but I believe that there's a subconscious that keeps them from doing things. And there's also the fact that some people just don't like to try a little bit harder. They don't like to work a little bit harder. You know, it's the one, and I guess somebody once said to me a long time ago, it doesn't take much to go first class, much more to go first class. And I said, what are you talking about? He says, well, you can go out to dinner, you can go to this restaurant or that restaurant, you know, there's a big price difference. He's, let's go and find out for sure. And guess what? It wasn't that big of a difference to go, quote, first class, take my clients out first class. Last time you and I had dinner, remember where it was?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, we had a big steak, didn't we?
Yeah, we were at Morton's,
first
right?
First class.
Yeah.
First class. You took me to dinner when I was up there visiting you. I can't remember the name of the restaurant. We sat at this table and watched the chef prepare the food at the counter. First class, right?
Absolutely. That was a great experience.
Yeah. Well, and my take on it was, we weren't at some fancy restaurant that was over the top, but you did it right, you know, that little bit of extra. And I believe sometimes people just don't take what's necessary to do the little bit extra. It could be working an extra half hour or an hour a day while other people are going home at 5 o'clock. You wait until 5:30, quarter to six. Hey, the traffic's less. You really don't get home that much later. You got that much more done. And that may be all the difference that it takes to be that much more successful than your peers.
So tell me how this quote has been impactful to you personally. I mean, Shep, you're a chronic overachiever, right? I mean, in the typical sense, you're an author, you're an entrepreneur, you're a speaker, you've got a travel and business schedule that's crazy, but you're still really committed in all the aspects of your personal life.
Well, there's several things going on there. Number one, I have to be careful not to overcommit. And that's real important because it's real easy if we're not careful to say yes to everything that comes our way. So I've learned to say no. I've also learned to delegate, I think, pretty well. And I still can always use help. The other thing that I think is very important is that I stay in my lane. I know what I'm really good at. And you mentioned all these different things, you know, author, speaker, entrepreneur, but they're all focused on the core part of my business. This is what is necessary for me to do my business. So I have this lane that I'm in, and that is I work with companies that want to create amazing customer service experiences for their customers and their employees. And so what does it take to do that? Well, I'm known as a speaker. That's how I first started out. I write books. Hey, that crosses over into speaking. I've created training products and training programs. I don't necessarily do the training. I have other people to do that for me. But that's all part of staying in that lane, and my clients know what I'm great at. If you want to call me and talk to me about leadership or time management, I'm going to recommend somebody that could do that. It's not me, but I know what I'm good at. I know what it takes to get there, and that's what I'm focused on.
So how do you stay focused on that? Is there a deliberate thing? Are you intentional about that, or have you just gotten used to it? It's a habit now.
Well, in the beginning, it was very easy to get off focus because it was the next shiny object. And by the way, I have that ADSO, which is kind of like ADD, you know, but it's, you know, attention deficit, shiny object, you know, and I look around as soon as it moves, I'm all over it. And in business, it's very easy to chase this shiny object to, do something, you know, that looks better. And what happens is, how do I best explain it? If I go to a conference and I sit in on some great speakers, and I say, there's a great takeaway. When I take that away, I'm thinking, what does that takeaway do to supplement or augment what I currently do versus replace? And too many times, at least people in my business, switch because they see something new and they stop doing something that worked. One of the best exercises that ever in my life that I've ever done in my business life is something called the 10 times mind expander. I go to a coaching program with Dan Sullivan, the strategic coach. And in this program, he says, imagine what your business would look like if it were 10 times bigger. How do you get there? And he says, here's how. Take a look at what you've done from the beginning of your business to what you've done now. And look for these milestones. Was it a new client? Was it doing something different in your business? Well, there were several things that happened for me. One is I remember hiring my first assistant and realizing at that point in time, I could offload so many marketing and sales functions to her so that I could focus on what I was best at, which is truly getting in discussions with clients. Because I found that if I marketed and sold real hard, then I would get bookings, and then I would not be marketing and selling because I was doing the bookings, right? And then next thing you know, it's like I'm slow again. So what do? I get back on the phone, market, and sell. But as soon as I had that assistant, she took over some of that function. All of a sudden, things started to smooth out. Then I started looking for the perfect clients, the ones that I found were most successful. I said, how can I repeat that? So it was a great function of repeating of the things that were already working for you that you don't do anymore. Too many times we get, you know, siphoned off into some other activity that's going to get in the way of us doing what's always worked best.
And that helps with the focus, right? I mean, it's almost contagious at that stage when you start to focus on the things that you get really great results on, then you're no longer just derailing from thing to thing, but you're actually picking up momentum in a certain direction, staying in that lane like you called it, right?
Right. Now, you also have to be aware of strategic byproducts, and that is Dan Sullivan's term, not mine, but I think it works real well because along the way, things are going to happen. You got to say, oh, that's a great idea. Example, 9/11 hit back in 2001. It was a catastrophe, obviously. You know, it was just the worst thing that could have happened to the United States. And it was also one of the worst things that could have happened to many businesses, mine included. What happened, my business was focused on, sure, I wrote books, but the main part of my income was I was hired to go to nice resorts and do meetings, you know, that were incentive trips, sales meetings, that type of thing. Well, guess what stopped immediately after 9/11? Companies didn't want to put a bunch of their top people on an airplane and take them to a resort for all kinds of fears of terrorist activity and all types of other things that could happen. So my business could have potentially gone in the tank. But what happened is somebody said, boy, I really wish you could just simply bring like the product to us, you know, the product being my content, not so much me doing my speech. You go, tell me what that means. And he told me, I go, you know what? I've already got that content. No reason I can't repurpose it, create a training product. And now we can go to a company on their, where they're located on their days, their hours, with anybody that wants to attend versus just a sales group. And guess what happens at that point? Now I've got this training business. And just 2 years ago, my training business surpassed my regular speaking business in revenue, which, hey, if I hadn't have listened to my clients and recognized that byproduct as a result of something bad that happened, I wouldn't have that.
And is that a – I mean, that realization you made in terms of the pivot from just the off-site training to the on-site training programs that you developed, or you already had and you repurposed, rather.
Right. I just repurposed it. It was all my content. I'd already written it. I'd written books and everything else. And now we do it online, not just on-site. So if a company has a budget issue and they only have 10 people they want to train, well, we've got an online version that actually, in my opinion, I don't want to say this too often, the on-site serves its function. It's great to have a trainer there. But online, rather than it being just a day, we can break this thing up, and now it's a process, or as you guys say up in Canada, a process. I love that.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. And that really just came back. I mean, if we bring that back to your paper napkin, it's perfect because, you know, you were faced with a challenge. You had a strategic opportunity and an opportunity to pivot. You decided to do it, and you just went. You know, right? And it was in your lane. It was focused. All of those kinds of things, but you just repurpose what you already have.
Right. I think there's also a problem with people have a fear sometimes. I talk to people about what I'm doing who are in my business, and I tell them exactly how I do it. I tell them everything. I don't hold back secrets. It's like, and the reason is because I recognize I can tell them what I'm going to do. 99% of the people will not do what I do. I'm not sure. They don't have the effort, whatever. So back to the online learning. They know this has been successful for me. I'm the poster child for this company in my industry for online learning. And people say, can you give me a reference? Can you tell me about it? I tell them everything. I tell them exactly the, you know, how I put it together. And I tell them how much it costs and how much I've made, which is far more than what it costs. Well, I don't understand why they just sit around and think about it. While they're thinking about it, they could be doing it, and then once it's finished, they could be making money with it. And it's not just all about making money, but, hey, we're in business for a reason, right?
That's right. So do you ever – are there ever points when you're challenged with that philosophy and then you start to hold yourself back or your fears are holding yourself back? What do you do to get past that?
Well, it's not so much the fear that holds me back. I take a look, obviously, when I look at any project, even if I'm getting ready to go write another book, I look at what it's going to cost me, not just in terms of financial costs, but time, because time really at the end of the day does become money. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, why we're in business. We're in business to make a living, to create a lifestyle, not just to make money. We're in business to help our clients. And I want to make sure that if I start off on a venture, that I don't neglect what my clients need from me. Bandwidth is real important because that could cost me in the long term. It could cost for my client. Sure, money-wise, if I make a financial mistake and invest in something in my business that doesn't work, which I've done, the good news is it hasn't, you know, derailed my business, but I really kick myself for not doing the research sometimes necessary to get it done. But I think that's what – it's not a fear that holds me back. I think it's taking a look at my time and saying, can I commit, make this work, and it won't hurt what I'm currently doing. And if I'm lucky, it'll build. By the way, one of the cool things that entrepreneurs learn how to do if they start small, like me, I'm a small grassroots solopreneur. I started in my second bedroom by myself. When I realized it was time to hire somebody new, I did. And I said, wow. The return on investment was huge. So we all have to recognize, you know, today I don't have like a huge team, but I've got four people on my team plus a bunch of subcontractors that we use. But there's a point in time where I say it's time to bring on that person. And I realize that's going to cost me a lot on an annual basis. And they've got to come out and be a profit center for me, not a cost center. I can't hold myself back from getting in the way of growing because I'm afraid to bring on something new or try somebody new. So does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So how do you break out of that? You know, do you vet that with anybody? Is this just an analysis you make in your head? Is this something that you do on your own? Are you a Lone Ranger?
I'm not a total Lone Ranger, but I'm pretty close to being a Lone Ranger. Good news is I make my decisions, and then what I try to do is confirm them with others. I'm looking for affirmation, but I'm also looking for the holes that I might not have seen. So I go to some peers in my own industry, and then I also go to and we're both members of the Entrepreneurs Organization, and we meet with their forum, which is a small group of people. We have 8 in our forum, including myself. And every once in a while, I'll bring an idea to them. You know, part of it is if you can write a check and afford to write a check to resolve an issue, it's really not a problem. You know, it's just an expense. So I'm looking for more, not so much financial thoughts as much as like, is this, I want to know your opinion, your ideas. You know, what do you think of this? If this were presented to you, would your company bring in this type of service or this type of product? And you know, that's not true test marketing, but at least I'm talking to people that I trust will give me a real opinion. That's important. Will they give you the real opinion, not just something to make you feel good? I want somebody to shoot holes through it if it's possible.
Yeah, so when are you uncomfortable making a decision without having vetted it? Is there ever a position where you sort of sit back and you go, gee, I'm just uncomfortable. I don't feel like I've got the information. What do you do then?
Well, I'm a creative guy, so I grow into things. I start with this little idea, and I start thinking about it, playing with it. I write things down. I create bullet points. I do my list. This is what could happen. This is the business plan that I see. And along the way, things happen. Expansion of my mind takes place. I don't know what it is, why I was born that way. I don't know, but that's what happens. You know, I think part of it is I start with the end in mind, and then I reverse engineer. And that may be a process I go through in my head whenever I think about bringing on trying something new.
And that helps you point your direction in the lane, right? When you're starting with the end in mind, then knowing the lane's going in the right direction,
right,
is easier to do.
Right. Is this congruent with what I do? That's important.
Now, since you're in a service business, right, and your service is about delivering amazing customer service experiences consistently throughout the entire organization, where that starts and where that ends, how do you ensure that product image consistency exists in your organization with everything that you do?
Right. Well, we try very hard because if we're going to teach it, we have to do it. And our goal is not just to deliver great services, to create confidence. And when you deliver great service, that does create confidence. And the more confidence you create, the more trust is there. And therefore that client trusts you and becomes loyal to you. Not so much loyal. And I'd love to think they're loyal and they'd never use anybody else but me. But the loyalty comes where, you know, we just talked to a client today. They haven't used me in several years, but they ask me, what's your opinion on this speaker? The fact that they trust me to give them an opinion on a speaker they're going to hire, even if it's not me, to me speaks volumes of the relationship that we have. And, you know, it might be 3 years, 5 years down the road before they hire me again. But in that whole time, we've kept in contact. And I think at that point, they realize it's not about the money. It's about the relationship. And if you focus on the customer, eventually the relationship builds itself to where the money sometimes follows.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Now, when we go back to your paper napkin wisdom, was this something that you've always done? That you just, like, you did from day one, you started your business, and you always were centered around the fact that the difference between those who do and those that don't are those who do and those that don't won't? Is that something you just understood?
Well, the moment somebody said that to me, I knew right away that's about me. And that, I mean, it summed up really the reason I was successful. And the guy that told it to me, I'll tell you his name. It was Art Johnson. And that's why the only difference between his quote and mine is the last word. But that last word is to me a big last word. And he said, my uncle told me, and Art was the president of AAA, you know, the automotive, AAA Association Automotive, whatever, American Automotive, whatever it is. You can figure it out. But when we sat down and had lunch, he says, yeah, my uncle once said, those that do, do, those that don't. I thought, that's me, because I'm always doing. That's why I'm successful. And then I thought, you know what, though? A lot of the reasons they just don't is because they won't. It's not that hard sometimes to do the extra thing, to stay an extra 20 minutes, to make that extra phone call, to work a little bit harder, to step out of your comfort zone just a little bit. And sometimes the results are astounding.
And it is just a little bit, right? It's not like you have to stay. You're not talking about staying an extra 8 hours.
Nope. Although some of us do.
Some of us do. Every now and then we have to. But
right, we do what we have to.
But it's really that diligence of just doing a little more, just putting a little more of yourself into it.
Right. And at the end of the day, it's, again, sometimes it's just a little upper. Now, the most successful people get way off balance, you know that, and that we end up doing that extra 8 hours. We work through a weekend. And what I've learned is to separate really important time. If I need to do this, I'll make the time. But otherwise, I recognize it's usually just working a little bit harder and smarter. Not, I guess that's it. Working a little smarter, not necessarily harder. Sometimes it's a little bit harder, but we can, you know, you get the idea. The goal is, it's just, you know, you can be exceptionally better at something if you just work a little bit harder.
And then asking for help with that other stuff, right? Empowering your team and getting help.
Getting help to support you, and also getting help from the outside. Be willing to ask people, you know, what their thoughts are. And most important, if you're going to ask somebody their thoughts on something and get their feedback, don't fight them on it, because their perception is their reality, even if it's not yours, and that's okay too.
Yeah, I think it's a very valuable point. I think so often we'll ask people what they think and then simply justify our perspective.
Right.
Justify it back to them when we've asked them for their perspective, which is totally different. When you've been knocked down a few times, let's say put yourself in a framework where you've attempted to launch something, you've attempted to get something off the ground that's deeply meaningful to you to accomplish, and you've had setback after setback, and you're not doing as a result. You know, you're starting, but you're not finishing. You're not accomplishing.
Well, it's real easy to move on, because what I do is, you know, I start with the end in mind. I work backwards. I set goals. I know what my milestones are. I actually write them out. I have something called a strategy circle, which, again, I get from my coach, Dan Sullivan, which we track. Now, once in a while, we go off track with a date. You know, maybe we're a week behind. Fine. That's totally cool. Just reset your timeline. But if you see you're really going off track or you're not getting it done, there's a reason that's happening. And sometimes that's a message to stop doing something, because it doesn't work. Move on to something else.
So how intentional are you about reviewing your milestones? Is that a weekly thing? Is that a monthly thing?
It is. If not daily, it's definitely weekly. I do write once a week what I accomplished over the week, what I want to accomplish next week. Throughout the day, you know, obviously I take a look at what's going on. I actually, at the end of each day, I used to do this. I'm not as diligent in it as I wanted to see what would happen if after a year, at the end of each day, I wrote down in one of those pocket planners, I looked at it as a pocket reflector, what good did I accomplish in my personal life and what good did I accomplish in my professional business life? And I wrote down one positive thing from each for a solid year. That's a pretty cool, your whole thing, your mind shifts as a result of that exercise.
And what was the effect for you? I mean, the mind shift, what came out of that mind shift for you?
What came out of it was personal fulfillment. I had a feeling of gratitude. I was able to say realistically that, you know, bad days only last 24 hours because there's almost always something good that happened in the day. You know, even in the darkest moment, there's something positive that can be found.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful. That really goes to one of the great quotes that I learned from Warren Restand. And Warren talks about, when you change the way you look at the world you look at changes. And if you focus on those moments of greatness that occur every single day, the way you feel about the whole day shifts in a heartbeat. That helps you enable. I think that sort of resonates with you as well, because that gets you in the framework that you can do.
Right. Because, you know, if you're a cynical person and you start to do this exercise and you all of a sudden realize, you know, the one that I just talked about, where once a day you have to find something good or positive that happened, that what happens is that after a period of time, you realize life's not so bad. There's always something good. Now, I've always been a pretty optimistic guy to begin with. So this was really just something that was validating, you know, what I already knew. But it was fun. It was a great little experiment. One of the cool things I do now is I have this planner I go through. I call it the quarterly focus, but every week I mention I write down several things I need to accomplish during the week. And at the end of the week, it's not checking off what I've accomplished. It's what else happened during the week that was great. It may have been had a great talk with Govin, and I'll circle that. And the reason I'll circle it, sometimes I don't circle anything through the week, is that was something that, you know, that was really special. It was important. It was a relationship builder. You know, I could say I got this great booking, or a great new client that I landed. I don't circle that because that might not be so meaningful as, boy, I had just a great half an hour quick little lunch with my daughter, and we talked about, you know, whatever. It was just a real connection. Sometimes it's the real connections that count. Or maybe there was some major breakthrough that I had in my business. That might be worth it. But I don't really think making money is necessarily the thing I'm going to circle as the most important thing that happened that week.
No, I think that really comes true with everything about you, right? I mean, you're focused on the relationship. You're focused on staying in your lane. None of that, it doesn't feel like you said, you know, I'm focused on just this revenue target and nothing else.
Right. Right. So, and that's important, and that's part of where my core values lie. And I think everybody has to have those, right? You know, what are the, and they need to be defined.
And you're intentionally focusing on them, and you're intentionally staying aligned with them on a regular basis, on a daily,
right,
weekly basis.
So I'll actually show you what this looks like. I keep it in my briefcase. Because I pull a bunch of things out of my briefcase. This is it right here. And I go through it once a quarter. So it's called the quarterly focus. And in this first column, it's my lifetime aspirations, my 1 year goals, my quarterly goals, and then the results. This is from last quarter, which just ended, you know, not that long ago. But what you can see is, I write down all types of different things that are important. Actually, that's from this quarter. No, that's from last quarter. I write down how many days I've taken and were really focused days on business, how many days off that I took. So, I mean, I have all types of ways of tracking and knowing how my life is going. This kind of document takes me 30 minutes a week to do, but it completely changes my life and makes me focus on what's important and relevant and what's going on.
You know, I love the R&D of speaking with other entrepreneurs, because it's just rip off and duplicate time, right? I see something like that.
Go for it. Take it and use it.
Yeah, no, I love that. I'm always also really connected to our core values, and we've sort of repurposed them recently and re-articulated them as drive, impact, approach, and leadership. So it's a dial, and in our conversation around the office, we're always talking about how to dial it up and dial in, and that was really dialed in behavior, or that was a really dialed in moment. As it relates to how we work with one another. Shep, you know, I'm really grateful for the time that you spent with me here this morning. Let me just ask you, what's new for you? What's coming up in the next little while?
Wow, what's new for me is, perhaps you're familiar with the latest and greatest book, Amaze Every Customer Every Time?
Yes.
Well, this isn't new now. It's 2 months old. But what's new is that we're going to take it and turn it into an online program. And what's cool is the subtitle is 52 Tools for Delivering the Most Amazing Customer Service on the Planet. So we are going to take it and create this course. We're going to go through the whole book as a course. And then once you're finished, each one of those 52 tools can be looked at one a week, randomly chosen. So you could say, I'm going to work on this one. And what's cool about it is people will say, and this is part of what this whole discussion we've had is about, there's 52 tools. Now, as the author who intimately knows this content, I can tell you without a doubt that every one of these 52 tools are appropriate for virtually anybody in any position at any company. But they won't agree with me until I sit down and talk with them. So what I say is randomly choose one, and even if it's one you don't think is appropriate for you, start thinking about how it might be. by the end of the week, come up with an example of how you might have used it. So it's a weekly program. It's going to force your mind to expand. It's going to confirm things you're already doing so you get to recognize, because a lot of it, you know, applies and it's natural. And it's a great little tool to use. And hey, at the end of the year, after you've gone through all 52, start over and do it again.
That's great. That's great. That's wonderful.
So that's what's new. We're working on that project right now.
That's fantastic. I look forward to trying that myself. So, Shep, thanks again for joining me. Hopefully I can bring you back again.
Do you have a copy of the book?
Not yet, but
we're sending it to you today.
I need my signed copy.
I will make sure it's signed and that your name is spelled correctly, because that is one tough name.
Well, I've got a collection of I've got your two other books already signed and in my bookshelf, and I refer to them actually on a regular basis, so I appreciate that.
I'll get this out to you today.
That'd be wonderful. Thanks so much, Shep.
Thank you. You take care.
You too. Thanks.
All right, we'll talk soon. Thanks. Yeah.
Really excited to have Shep share all of that with us here today. And you know, he's a fired up kind of guy. He's a passionate guy. He's intent on customer service and loyalty. But his simple approach to getting stuff done by just doing it is really powerful. It's a really powerful lesson. It's a really powerful way to start. And he's accomplished a great deal with it. And, you know, certainly that's something that's infectious. I mean, any time with Shep is quality time. Thank you for listening, and thank you for joining in the conversation around paper napkin wisdom. If you'd like to see other podcasts and other paper napkins, you can see them all at www.papernapkinwisdom.com. Alternatively, you can follow Wise Napkin on Twitter, or also you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. My name is Govind Jayaraman. This was Paper Napkin Wisdom. Thank you for listening.
Feel the darkness coming over, see how it began.